Performing Arts, and the listeners of WEFT. The spring semester will begin January 25th with blues by the Jontavious Willis Band and multi-instrumentalist Michelle Indigaocello's No More Water, The Gospel of James Baldwin on January 28th. Complete information on these performances is available online at KrannertCenter.com.
And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Mark Raymond, CEO of the Split Second Foundation. But first, disability news for the week of January 27th, 2025. Last week, Governor Pritzker signed the Dignity and Pay Act, which will, over the next few years, eliminate subminimum wages for people with disabilities in Illinois. More information on that new law will be shared in coming weeks. In other news, the U.S. Supreme Court will take up a case on the standard that students must meet in order to bring claims of disability discrimination at school. The court said that it would hear the case known as AJT versus Osseo Area Schools. The question is whether students with disabilities must show that schools acted in, quote, bad faith or gross misjudgment, end quote, to claim that their rights were violated under the Americans with Disabilities Act or Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. The case was brought by the parents of a Minnesota student identified in court documents as Ava. She has severe epilepsy and needs help with everyday activities like walking and toileting. Ava's seizures are more common in the morning hours, so she cannot attend school before noon on many days. Ava's parents have been unable to convince the school district, Osseo Area Schools, to provide evening instruction so that she could have a full day of school starting at noon. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit found that the school district failed to provide a free appropriate public education in violation of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, but the court dismissed discrimination claims brought under the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act. The appeals court said that Ava, quote, may have established a genuine dispute about whether the district was negligent or even deliberately indifferent, but that's just not enough, end quote. Now Ava's parents are asking the Supreme Court to decide. The Osseo Area Schools say that all circuit courts who have a more stringent standard to determine discrimination expect students with disabilities to show that schools had an intent to discriminate. The school district's attorney said, quote, although petitioners' parents disagree with some decisions the district made, those disagreements do not evince discriminatory intent under any standard used in any circuit, end quote. Several disability advocacy groups jointly filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court siding with Ava, saying that there is no requirement of bad faith or gross misjudgment in the ADA or Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and that the standard has never been applied to similar claims brought outside of educational settings. Roman Martinez, an attorney who will represent Ava at the Supreme Court, said, quote, both the ADA and Rehabilitation Act provide much-needed relief to educational discrimination, which often has life-altering consequences for children with disabilities. Yet, as the case illustrates, an atextual rule being imposed in five circuits makes it far harder for them to prove their claims for no good reason and with real consequences. We hope to persuade the justices to reject the Eighth Circuit's approach and vindicate Ava's rights and those of other children with disabilities, end quote. Attorneys for Ava say it's likely that the case will be heard by the Supreme Court in April. The Social Security Administration is taking steps to simplify applying for supplemental security income benefits. In December, they ruled that they rolled out an online application for SSI, which serves many people with developmental disabilities. The simplified application includes only about 12 questions, down considerably from 54 questions. They are written in plain language, and there is a drop-down menu with possible answers for some questions. The changes reduce the time it takes to apply and permit applicants to get claim decisions more quickly. The new online application is available to adults 18 to 64 applying for SSI and Social Security Disability Insurance who have never been married and have never applied for SSI for themselves or a child. Eventually, it will be expanded to all applicants in person, over the phone, and online, according to officials. The new application is the first stage of what Social Security officials described as a multi-year effort to improve the application process and increase access for eligible individuals. About 7.4 million Americans, including many with disabilities, receive SSI each month. And finally, the Texas Rangers' newly acquired first baseman, Jake Berger, has officially changed his number from 36 to 21 in honor of his daughter, who was born in October and has Down syndrome. Berger said of his decision, quote, 21 is a very important number. Trisomy 21 is what Down syndrome is clinically called, and it's an extra copy of the 21st chromosome. So for me, this is the first time I can pick a number that's not just close to my heart, but close to a lot of people's hearts. And for me, it's trying to spread awareness and try to get the word out about Down syndrome and how people can get support. I'm just really proud of this number and really excited to wear this and represent my daughter, end quote. Berger's brother-in-law, who is Penelope's godfather, the child, also has Down syndrome, and which he said helped him prepare for the diagnosis. Berger, who was traded from the Miami Marlins in December, had begun thinking about changing his number once his daughter was born and credited his wife for coming up with the idea. He expressed gratitude for the many people who have come forward to give him and his family support over the first few months of his daughter's life and is now working to organize a foundation to help what he describes as the lucky few, meaning people whose families include a person with Down syndrome. And that's the news for this week. And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today on the phone by my guest, disability advocate Mark Raymond Jr., who is the CEO of the Split Second Foundation. So, Mark, I'd like to welcome you, first of all, to the program. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Vicki. I'm so excited to have this conversation.
So let's start out by you introducing yourself to the listeners. Let everybody know who you are and why you've gotten into the field that you have.
Absolutely. Well, my name is Mark Raymond Jr. I'm a 33-year-old from New Orleans. And basically how I got introduced to this space was my own life changed in a split second on July 4th, 2016, after a diving accident in a local lake left me paralyzed from about the chest down. So I dove off the back of one of my best friend's boat and I shattered the C5 vertebrae in my neck. And of course, you know, that initial situation going through inpatient care and navigating the healthcare system really just opened my eyes to how under-resourced the disabled community was.
Mm-hmm.
I only spent about 6 weeks in inpatient therapy, where I, you know, barely got a taste of how to live this life. And once I was discharged, you know, the onus of that responsibility of my care was on my family. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed to have a strong family that could support me and push me and love me and provide, you know, all of the things that I needed to develop and thrive in this new situation. But I noticed immediately how other people who didn't have the same circumstances that I did were affected, you know, much more negatively. And we were all dealing with the same level of depression and grief as, you know, together. But, you know, those who had strong support systems and resources around them just took steps towards a better quality of life and acceptance of this life much quicker than those who didn't.
Right.
However, I got into outpatient therapy and was probably there for about a year before I was discharged because, again, insurance dictated that I was not making physical gains and it was time for me to live this life on my own outside of, you know, getting occupational therapy and physical therapy, which was another huge blow because the expectation there was that my family, who were already doing so much for me, could add to their plate exercising me every day, right? Because if I don't live, if I don't exercise, if I don't move my body, I'm subject to some type of secondary complication, a bed sore, a pulmonary embolism, cardiovascular situations, right?
Yeah.
So it was just adding another element of my care back onto my family. And I wanted to do something to change that. I wanted to be able to start with some type of fitness program that could really impact the lives of people with disabilities. And that was like the initial concept of the Split Second Foundation. The reason that, of course, we named it Split Second Foundation was because anybody's life can change in a split second, and every day somebody's does.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many split second stories I have heard from clients at my fitness facility and then other people, you know, who almost had the same type of injury or, you know, had a stroke and have gotten better. I think everybody is susceptible to that split second moment. But for us, it's about providing the resources and the care and the what's next, so that people get back to the best quality of life as quickly as possible.
Right. Now, my daughter was born with a disability, so that experience is, you know, completely different because we were dealing with it from day one. But you became an advocate very quickly, obviously. Your accident was in 2016, you said? Yeah. So, I mean, really just a few years and you have just dived in with everything you've got. So how does your experience with disability, did you have any awareness of what the system was like prior to your accident? Did you know anybody with a disability or was this completely, everything was new?
Everything was new. The people that I did know that had gone through strokes, I don't think, like most people, I ever really paid attention to the details, right, of what it took for my aunt to live that life, you know, and the struggles that she had from a communication perspective or, you know, just getting dressed, right, getting fed. Like, I saw it, but I didn't see it. And when it hit me, you know, like everyone else, it was just like the light bulb moment, and how do people do this? I've always been active and a problem solver. I have a degree in chemistry, so like my brain just went to like turning to, okay, what can I do to solve and provide resources and to fix some of this, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a huge basket of barriers, right?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about those so that we can spend all the positive time on the solutions that you've developed. So what are the barriers that you recognize?
The barriers were, one, big time, access to resources, especially like capital. financial resources. I think most people living with a disability live on a fixed income, especially, you know, the more severe the disability, the more limited that those resources are, be it Social Security or Medicaid. Another huge barrier, access to fitness programs so people can stay healthy, right, outside of occupational therapy and physical therapy, when we know insurance is minimizing the amount of visitations people get. Another huge barrier, access to living opportunities, right? It's not enough accessible housing in the country. So people go through these experiences and then have to adapt their homes. I know I had to build an accessible bathroom that cost $20,000, right? Which, you know, thankfully I had parents who could afford that. But what happens to that family that, you know, dad has a stroke, mom has to quit job to take care of them? How do they make those renovations, you know, on such a fixed income? So another barrier, another huge barrier is transportation, getting people to and from doctor's appointments, to and from fitness opportunities, to and from physical therapy, right? In such a limited structure. And I think also policy and the way, you know, the ADA hasn't been substantially amended since its initial inception, right, in 1990. And there are so many industries that have popped up, such as like Uber and Lyft and Airbnb, that don't really have enough accessibility. Same thing with the airline industry. Like, for the life, I can't figure out why there aren't at least two spots on every plane for a wheelchair to be able to just lock in instead of us having to transfer into an aisle chair, you know, and be the first one on the plane and the last one off. That's a barrier. So I've actually missed flights because my connecting time was too short, or because I'm waiting for these guys to get my wheelchair and it took 30 minutes, you know?
Not to mention the broken wheelchairs that happen.
Not to mention the broken wheelchairs. And then I think about the more societal barriers, right? When we have to look to the end of every block once we're on a new block to make sure we can get down. So if there's not a curb cut, and just accessibility in a city, all of those things really make life a little bit more tricky. And that adversity, I feel, has really pushed me to, you know, step up as an advocate and as a leader to push other leaders and other, you know, be it government officials or developers or architects, to think about disability more holistically and not like, you know, not like the stepchild that you just need to do a few little things for and check some boxes, right? A more accessible world is a better world for all of us, because you don't want to have to avenge and fix all of these things on the post after your life changes. And so that's been my kind of approach through all of this.
So you
started first recognizing.
So you started the Split Second Foundation. What is the role then? What does the Split Second Foundation do? How does it help?
Well, the Split Second Foundation has been helpful in, one, identifying all of these problems, and then, two, creating solutions, right? So the first program that we launched was Split Second Fitness, and it operates as a either in tandem or post-outpatient or inpatient therapy fitness experience for people to continue their recovery and rehab journey. We charge $50 a month for our clients to come. With that, they get access to our facility and 2 one-on-one sessions a week with our trained staff who knows how to deal with a host of different disabilities. So it's about an $850 value that we subsidize by throwing large events and raising grant funding. It's our show of love for the community, right?
And you're talking specifically in New Orleans, right? You're not like across the country yet.
Not yet, but that is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
I think we recognize that this need exists everywhere. Although New Orleans is a poor city, And in the initial, you know, the startup was here. It was, it was how do I solve some of these problems in my home first? But, you know, quite honestly, now I get messages and emails and phone calls from people from all over the world, you know, asking how they could participate in this program or to bring one there. And that's just the first program. The second program, huge need around this was, as people transition from inpatient therapy back into society, who's their quarterback or how are they being connected to resources? I.e. every state has like a bucket of resources that people can tap into. Here in Louisiana, it's Louisiana Department of Health, Louisiana Assistive Technologies, Louisiana Brain Injury, Louisiana Rehabilitative Services. But a lot of people don't know how to navigate those systems. So we actually recently got a grant to fund our first, or the launch of our case management and mental health program that will serve as both a mental health resource to help people deal with the grief and think through, you know, what happened to them, while also providing them with more of a life coach. I don't want to call them a social worker, but a life coach who can help them navigate the future of this situation and get back to a good quality of life. Underneath that program, we plan to do a lot of our workforce development work as well, right? Because what I've noticed at our fitness center is a lot of my clients still have the capacity to work. It's just about finding the right situation for them. And so we've been really intentional about developing our next initiative, which really fits into our this conversation, which is our education, employment, and internship initiative. We're calling it EEI. Right. But the whole focus of that is to get educate people on how to live this life, educate caregivers on, you know, do's and don'ts, and let us guide you based off of our experience dealing with these situations. Next, it's, you know, where can we find you work? Right. Whether that be from an internship perspective or just outright employment, and connecting with different different companies who are truly passionate about hiring people with disabilities.
I would imagine, too, that there are a number of people that you've worked with or talked with who had jobs prior to their disability that require a lot of mobility. And what, you know, there must be challenges in trying to figure out what kind of job would best suit that individual and something that they would like to do in their life.
Exactly. You know, going back to the entire purpose of all of this is to really enhance a person's quality of life. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, we all want to feel good about the work that we do, right? I don't think, you know, I think everybody wants to make that choice, too.
What did you do, Mark, before you had your accident?
I was working as a broadcast engineer, so I was traveling the country doing very technical work, basically putting NBA, NFL concerts and the like on television. So my responsibility was setting up the audio, the visual, making sure satellites worked. I was really immersed in the broadcast engineering world. And, of course, that job required really functioning hands and being able to reach and lift. And, you know, unfortunately for me, after my accident, it was a job that I could not return to.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's true of many people. So to put your energy into something where you are, you know, doing good for other people is commendable, for sure.
Well, I can say that I've lived two full lives thus far. And I loved both buckets of work that I've been able to do, both as a broadcast engineer and now as an advocate and a thinker. I think I get to be a lot more creative in the space that I'm in now and solving problems. Although both of those, you know, career paths was heavily rooted in problem solving and dealing with people. And I've just been blessed to have great people around and pushing me.
Sounds like it. It really does. But talk a little bit about the barriers for employment other than accessibility. Have you found any outright just people, employers who were afraid of hiring somebody with a disability? And where does that fear come from?
I think the fear comes from a place of productivity. So wait, let me reframe. The answer is yes. In talking with other clients and even my own experience, trying to navigate that initial time frame, you know, it's not like I have a degree, right? I'm pretty mm-hmm. smart. People, you know, weren't exactly saying, "Hey, Mark, you know, I understand. Why don't you come, you know, try and do this job for me? You can help in this capacity." So that part was missing. But also from what I've seen, you know, my clients go through is like you'll start a job. And I think the expectations around productivity have really, instilled that initial fear mm-hmm. in folks with disabilities, whether that be, you know, just getting to the job site, being able to fully do the job. But I think through the pandemic, we saw a huge shift in that thought process because a lot of work became virtual.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw a slight uptick in the hiring of people with mobility challenges, for example, in different spaces. But I do feel like some of that, or the majority of that fear is just around productivity and capacity to do a job, or the fear that this disability is going to, you know, hinder this person's ability,
and not having experience with people that have disabilities in general, I yes. think also contributes as well. So people want to get more information about the Split Second Foundation. What's the best way to do that?
Oh, please visit splitsecondfoundation.org. You can learn all about my story, about the programs that we offer, and more broadly, our initiative to build community. I think that's what's most important in this space, is to give people a place where they feel comfortable and at home and safe. Because once you give them that, and once we give them hope and love, you start to see. You start to see the light in people.
Yeah.
You know, and they start to lean more into, okay, this is, I can live this life. I can do this. Right? He's doing it. She's doing it. You know, let me just navigate this and figure this out. And I think I can, you know.
One person at a time, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, one day at a time and one person at a time.
That's right.
That right.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Mark Raymond Jr., CEO of the Split Second Foundation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Vicki. Y'all have a great day.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Live Action Games. If you're looking for a wide selection of classic and modern video games, consoles, controllers, books, and collectibles, Live Action Games has you covered. Live Action Games is open Tuesday through Saturday at 111 North Market Street in downtown Champaign, right next door to WEFT. New and gently used inventory arrives daily. For a list of in-stock items or additional Live Action Games,